It's Peter B. Collins with news and comment. Wednesday, January 25th.
Promises, promises, I'm up through with promises, promises now. I don't know how I got the nerve.
Barack Obama delivered his third State of the Union message last night. Full of promises, a dazzling array of ideas, certainly to be dead on arrival in the Republican-controlled House, and most would require either in vitro or serious life support in the United States Senate. That said, this is a political event. It frames and launches the president's reelection campaign, and there were some great lines in the speech. There were some interesting ideas in the speech. There were some despicable sellouts in this speech as well. As predicted, there was no mention of Occupy, although the themes that he relied on were clearly influenced by the Occupy movement, the disparities of wealth in this country, his new Buffett plan to raise taxes on millionaires and billionaires so that their secretaries don't pay a higher rate than they do. There was also no mention of Guantanamo and his promise to close the ugly prison in Cuba, and no mention of the recently signed dastardly law, the National Defense Authorization Act. In a few moments, Ray McGovern, the former CIA analyst, has some comments for you on the NDAA, excerpted from an interview, an in-depth interview, posted at peterbcollins.com today. And Ray had a lot to say about many issues. He's always very frank. But back to the president's speech, some of the good and the bad. Well, he talked about creating incentives to get American corporations to bring jobs back to the United States. And he talks about the Master Lock Company. Everybody's used a master combination lock in grade school and high school, right? Well, Master Lock is bringing jobs back to Milwaukee. Now, that's fine. But the idea that he's going to be able to get any meaningful tax policy through the Republican-controlled House after a bloody battle over the extension of the payroll tax cut, I think, is naive. And, of course, the president was in full salesman mode. In fact, I was very uncomfortable with the first few minutes of the speech as he opened with a reference to our troops coming home from Iraq. Made no mention that he had opposed the war in Iraq and that's why we elected him. But he talked about the teamwork of our troops. And he returned to that theme at the very end of the speech, I believe, trying to shame the members of Congress, including the obstructionist radical Republicans, into some sort of a cooperative approach. And once again, he's talking past the people in front of him. And he hopes to impress the center of the electorate. What was very clear in the president's speech was he wasn't talking to progressives like me. He wasn't really talking exclusively to Democrats. He's trying to position himself as the head of the mythical centrist party in this country. And that influenced almost every aspect of the speech. One great idea, he proposes job training linked to community colleges, partnering with corporations to train people. The good line, turn the unemployment system to a re-employment system. But he can't even get the Republicans to approve extension of unemployment benefits for the hardcore out of work in this country. He offered a statement without any basis, you know, in legislation or policy, but he said he wants to adopt a plan that any student must stay in high school until they graduate or turn 18. And this is a feel-good, sounds-good kind of thing because the high school dropout rate in this country is disgusting. But forcing people to go to school who aren't going to pay attention just diminishes the learning experience for everybody else, creates all kinds of disciplinary problems and other issues. And we've seen that social promotion, where you pass flunking people from one grade to the next, is a drag on the whole system and doesn't help the individual. And so the idea that we're going to move into a social promotion and detention program and keep kids in high school until they're 18 Well, that doesn't pan out for me. Again, it's a great bumper sticker. Not sure how a policy like that would work. The president alarmed me by talking about American-made energy. And he said that he has ordered the Department of the Interior to open up 75% of potential offshore resources. Now, he wasn't explicit about California. And we do have a state-level ban on offshore drilling that the feds would have to override in some manner. But how on earth, less than 2 years after BP's grisly blowout in the Gulf of Mexico, can a president of the United States just talk blithely about expanding offshore drilling? It's insane and insulting. And again, he's not talking to me, he's not talking to you, he's talking to the mythical centrist voter in the center of the country who probably thinks the Keystone Pipeline is a good idea. He didn't mention the Keystone Pipeline, but in the rebuttal from the Republican side, Governor of Indiana Mitch Daniels, a former White House budget chief to George Bush, he mentioned the Keystone Pipeline and slammed Obama for that, saying that he is captive to extreme environmentalists. When you hear that, it just makes me go crazy, and perhaps it does for you too. I hope so. But Republicans accuse environmentalists of controlling this president. Yeah, I wish it were so, and I wish he were the liberal that the Republicans say he is. And he talked about an all-out, all-of-the-above strategy when it comes to domestic oil production. And those are code words of Republican talking points. A Democratic president has no business dancing on that dance floor. He also talked about how he's going to demand that frackers, he didn't use the term fracking, but underground exploration for natural gas, that they will have to disclose which chemicals they use. Well, that won't solve the problem. Groundwater and wells will still be contaminated. And fracking is a very dangerous process because it breaks down not only the groundwater, but underground structures. We've seen earthquakes in Ohio linked to fracking. And as long as Dick Cheney's exclusion of natural gas exploration from most federal regulation stands, identifying the exact chemicals that are poisoning the water will not stop the water from being poisoned. Now, the president did surprise me. He actually uttered the words climate change, but only as he yielded to the Republicans and conceded that they won't touch climate change in any way, shape, or form. So then he shifted to talking about a clean energy plan at the Pentagon. That's fine. I have no objection to that. And then he played again on Republican turf. One of their calls, starting with Ron Paul's desire to eliminate government departments, and Rick Perry wanted to cut government departments, he just couldn't remember which ones. Well, Obama pivots in their direction and says, yeah, we don't need all regulations. For example, we have a regulation about cleaning up spilled milk on dairy farms. Then he made a joke about not crying over spilt milk. Well, I would agree that in general, we don't need federal policies of cleaning up spilled milk. But we saw the spilled oil in the Gulf. It was not properly contained or cleaned up. And recently it's been revealed that Team Obama was busy spinning and trying to go with the lowest possible number of the gusher in the Gulf. I guess he can have it both ways. He finally said he's going to crack down on financial crimes and fraud. Where have you been, Barack? Why did it take 3 years to decide that we were taken in a criminal manner by the suits on Wall Street? This again is an empty promise. Show me the suits behind bars, and I'll believe you, Mr. President. Then he talked about Warren Buffett's secretary, his Buffett plan, and his desire to end the Bush tax cuts for the rich, because he wants to spend it on education, research, the military, and veterans. Well, it's not going to happen in this Congress. I think that is a safe bet. And then, once again, he threw us under the bus by introducing the idea of cutting Social Security and Medicare. Oh, yeah, he had some nice language there about how he'd, preserve a dignified retirement for Americans. But I'm sorry. To respond to the misleading talk of the Republican deficit hawks who created the deficit they're hawkish about, and to voluntarily cough up Social Security and Medicare, hoping down the road to get some Republican votes for killing the Bush tax cut or other ways of getting money from the wealthiest Americans. I'm sorry, that's more negotiating with himself. And it's tragic that a Democratic president would touch these third rails of Social Security and Medicare in this political context, just in order to get reelected. That's what it's about. That's what it's about. The other thing that I'll say the president had a good idea on, but I think it's dead on arrival, is he wants the Senate to change its rules so that any nominations are voted up or down within 90 days. I think that's a great idea, and it's not going to happen because those nominations are held hostage by senators in order to get their way and pursue their whims. And finally, I found it deeply offensive that the president ended his State of the Union message by invoking SEAL Team 6 and the killing of Osama bin Laden. He mentioned it at the beginning of the speech, just something to the extent that Osama bin Laden isn't around anymore. But then he went into detailed metaphors using the raid on bin Laden's compound, referencing the helicopter pilot who had to land a craft that was damaged, the soldiers who went up the stairs in the dark. And remember, when this happened, we got four different versions of the bin Laden raid within a week. And now he is trying to wax nostalgic about that story. And I guess they've gotten the story straight. But I found it very unconvincing. Anyway, I've seen a lot of these speeches, and it does bring out the jaundiced cynic in me, because presidents have to play to the crowd, and these are a laundry list of ideas, most of which they know will go absolutely nowhere. But that's my take on the president's State of the Union message delivered last night. Now let's listen to Ray McGovern talk about what he considers one of the biggest disappointments from President Barack Obama.
This is really serious stuff. And among all the things that have disappointed me about President Obama, this has to be on the top of the list. This reverses the rights for which our founders fought, for which our founders pledged their sacred fortunes as well as their lives and their honor, okay? When they did that, it was far from certain that they would avoid dangling from the end of a rope, but they did it anyway. They gave us the Bill of Rights. Now, that goes back, this kind of thing goes back not only to 1787 or whatever, but to 1215, when those gutsy English barons faced down King John and said, look, no longer will we allow you to pick up one of us or one of these peasants, put them in jail without habeas corpus, without the right for this person, whoever he or she is, to appear before a court and face the charges of which they're accused. Now, that's 1215, okay? Every civilized government since then has adopted one form or another of habeas corpus. This reverses that. It reverses three of the Bill of Rights, parts of the Constitution itself. It is incredible, and Obama signed it. So, yeah, he has the power now to do precisely what you said. You were giving material support to the enemy, Peter B., by purchasing one of those shirts.
Yeah.
And if people think they need an empirical example of this, there are young people in Chicago and in Minneapolis, Catholic workers, Quakers, other anti-war types, who are being tried on felony charges of giving material support to the enemy by virtue of their meeting and trying to do anti-war activity. So, you know, people need to know this, and that's the big thing. The fawning corporate media are keeping this from American people, but it's legal now for me, who served in this army, to be picked up by the people I used to command and be brought to Guantanamo without so much as a by your leave to my wife, kept there, and you know, seen ADA as the, without any, you know, forever.
Yeah.
And it's right in the bill there. So yeah, this is people need to know this. And the problem is that since Obama is not a Republican, the normal people who would be up in arms about this, for some reason, they're able to square with their conscience being relatively silent on this.
That's Ray McGovern. You can hear the full interview in Podcast 363, and the second portion of that is an interview with Nancy Tulanian of No More Guantanamos. Here in California, Governor Moonbeam, or Moonbeam 2, Jerry Brown, has some encouraging response from polls about his plans to ask voters in November to approve some tax increases in order to avoid further cuts primarily in education. And what's interesting is that voters polled in a survey released today, 68% say they support taxes on high earners. Yep, soak the rich. But I'm glad to see that 64% are opposed to an increase in the sales tax. Only 35% of likely voters support that, 64% against, and that mirrors my opinion. I don't believe at a time like this that we should increase the most regressive tax on the books in California. And I hope the governor will get that message and retune his plan. One of the other elements that's really sad that people are starting to realize is that Brown and the legislature entirely cut $600 million out of the education budget, money that was earmarked for school buses. And this is not race-based school busing. These are the rural areas of California, like the desert region near Death Valley National Park, where a 14-year-old girl named Marley makes a 200-mile round trip. Oh, I'm sorry. Hers is only 120 miles. I misstated that. 120 miles a day to go to school. And the school district spends about $3,500 a year per student to roll these buses. And also in Humboldt County, on the north coast of California, they recently sent layoff notices to 14 bus drivers. There are 650 students, and the buses cover over 200,000 miles a year of the rugged terrain in rural Humboldt County to bring them to school. And I'm sorry, this is a fundamental government service that should never be cut. You can find efficiencies. You can find different ways to do it. You could telecommute these kids a couple of days a week. I'm open to all kinds of creative approaches. But this is a fundamental service that government should provide. And to imagine that we have cut this service in order to reduce the car tax for some Lexus owners in California, and for people who have 3 and 4 cars, it steams me. Speaking of cars, there was an Environmental Protection Agency hearing in San Francisco yesterday, and the remarkable news is that auto manufacturers have agreed to proposed rules which would up the vehicle mileage requirement to 54.5 miles per gallon in just 12 years or 13 years. 2025 is when that would go into effect. Now, that's a huge leap. And the auto manufacturers in general have dragged their feet and, you know, they opposed any rules that would up the mileage requirements, particularly for the gas-guzzling SUVs. And SUVs are, you know, bogusly categorized as trucks or light trucks in order to get around some of the EPA regulations. So I think that's a very interesting development, and I'm pleased to see it. And finally, oh, not quite finally, second last, here in San Francisco, a supervisor, Jane Kim, has proposed legislation to clarify the role of local police in working with FBI counterterrorism units. And I think this is well-intentioned, but just a little bit off the mark. Jane Kim feels that they are targeting or profiling individuals with Arab and South Asian ethnic heritage. And I think that's an important issue and should be examined. But the bigger issue here is local authorities being used by the FBI in some of their misguided counterterrorism enforcement actions. And so I hope that the supervisor will widen her scope and look for a little bit more in trying to protect us from the overreach of the FBI. And finally, here in San Francisco, we're in the throes of a telenovela, a soap opera, that started when our new sheriff and a friend of mine who I've known for more than 20 years, Ross Mercurimi, was accused of an altercation with his wife on New Year's Eve. And that has led to three charges. These are non-felony misdemeanor charges of hurting his spouse, child endangerment, and attempting to persuade a witness. The witness either being his wife or a neighbor who videotaped the wife with a bruise on her arm and statements accusing Ross Mercurimi of manhandling her. Now, a former girlfriend of Mercurimi's, he's just been married to his current wife for a few years, Christina Flores has stood up and said that when they were going out, that he bruised her arm in a fight more than 3 years ago. And I have to say that this is kind of the last straw. Mercurimi is holding on to office. He faces a trial in the next month or so. And he said that he won't accept a paycheck while he's on trial. But he also, so far, has declined to take a leave of absence. And Ross, I encourage you to do that. I think you need to focus on this case. And I think the people need to know that you take seriously your role as a law enforcement officer who runs programs in the county jail for people accused of domestic violence or convicted of domestic violence. And I think that while I supported Ross in this run for sheriff, I think he has good policies and good credentials. This is a personal failing that may ultimately bring him down. We'll watch and wait, and I'll keep commenting on it here at peterbcollins.com. Hey, thanks for downloading today's news and comment. It's free, so put it up on Facebook, pretend you like it, and share it far and wide with your friends and people who think they're your friends.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.